In today's Mishnah, we're on the 5th and 6th Mishnah, on the 5th Perek Masechet Gittin. And the place of this Mishnah, as Katya mentions, is really in Masechet Ediyot, which explains why it says, He'id Rabbi Yochanan ben Gud Godah. That's how it starts, Rabbi Yochanan ben Gud testified. And that's really understood in the context of Masechet Ediyot, of what it means he testified, but we'll learn about it in far more detail then when it's relevant to discuss it in, again, much more detail. However, the reason why this Mishnah also appears here is really for the ending, because again, we're discussing other takanot in the context of Mibnei Tikkun Olam. So Mishnah says, He'id Rabbi Yochanan ben Gud al Chereshes Yaviv. So a chereshet refers to a woman who is a deaf mute. And we said a cheresh or a chereshet is not considered a bar dat. It doesn't have a halachic understanding. If you remember, we learned back in Masechet Yevamot that a cheresh or chereshet, if they get married, that would be considered only on a, say, a rabbinic level, because they don't have sufficient dat to make a binding on a biblical level. However, we also learned back then, a father has the capacity to marry off his minor daughter. And that's binding on a biblical level, and that would even apply to a chereshet. The novelty of this, what Rabbi Yochanan ben Gugur is saying, is that a chereshet siavi, if the father married this minor chereshet off, she would set beget, that she'd be able to be divorced. Despite the fact, ordinarily, a chereshet on her own, we think she has the capacity to effect marriage in a rabbinic level.
And in this case, when the father married off his daughter, who is a katana, it is effective on a biblical level.
Nonetheless, she can still be divorced. Why? Because he says, Isha mekereshet bar kocha, in other words, we don't require the das of an isha in the context of divorce. Let's look at the next case. Valaktana, this is another thing Yochanan ben Gudgud testified about. He says, Valaktana bat Yisrael shineset lekohen, shochela betruma. So here we're referring to a katana yotoma. So the father's passed away, and a katana, on a biblical level, as we've learned previously, only the father can marry off. However, midrabanan, the mother, or say the brother, could marry her off, but it's only binding on a rabbinic level, which means if she was a bas Yisrael and she was married off now to a kohen, she really wouldn't be able to eat truma on a biblical level because she's not considered married to him. However, the Mishnah says she ochela betruma, she can still eat truma midrabanan. We've learned back in Zrayim that certain truma can be considered so on a rabbinic level, and so we allow her to eat truma midrabanan, and we're not concerned that the fact that she's in that type of truma, she'll start eating truma minator, which is not allowed to do. And similarly, v'imeta, if she passes away, that the ba'ala, her husband, can yoresh her, can inherit from her. This is despite the fact they're really not considered married on a Torah level. Nonetheless, a Beit Din has a capacity which is called Hefker Beit Din Hefker, to transfer ownership if they so wish. And the basis of Hefker Beit Din Hefker, we'll understand, is important for the next couple of cases. Let's have a look. Next is Vahalam Marish Hagazul. So here referring to if someone stole a beam, a Shebana'u, so like a big support beam, and they built it straight into their babira. So this thief, he took a, say, you can imagine like an I-beam as a support as part of his house. In that situation, one of the takana was that he doesn't actually have to return that entire beam. He can simply, she told at Damav, that the person who was stolen from can simply be paid back. And that's Mipnei Takanat Shavim. What does that mean? Let's say no one knew about the fact he stole it and got away with it quite clearly. But he feels bad, he wants to do tshuva. If doing tshuva now would involve him, you know, demolishing his house in order to return the beam, that would be a bit of a disincentive. It would make tshuva far more difficult than if you said to him, look, you don't need to demolish your house, you can simply return money. Then, again, that lowers the barrier for this individual to do tshuva and give the money back to the person he stole from. So then we try and, again, encourage people to do tshuva. It says, Va'al chatat agzula shalona da rabba mishi mechaperet mibet tikkun olam. That's the final one that Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgudah had testified. What's that? That is, if someone stole an animal and brought it as a chatat, as a sin offering, which is ironic, but he did so, shalona da rabbim, and no one knew it was stolen, shi mechaperet, that it would be effective, it would be considered a good korban. And that's mipnei taknam hizbeach. So what's the concern? The concern is that if the Chachamim didn't say that, if the Chachamim said, look, this is, the animals are stolen, it's not a good korban, then this animal would be considered like a regular animal, a chulin animal, it's shechted in the Beis HaMikdash. Difference is, this korban chatat the kohanim can eat from. If it's just a chul, a regular animal, they wouldn't be able to do so. So the kohanim might start hesitating, they might not want to eat from the korbanot, they don't know, is it stolen, is it not? So therefore, to again smooth their operations out, they said, no, Beit Din apply the concept of hefker, Beit Din hefker, that all animals who are brought by individuals, even if they're stolen, would be considered effective korbanon. Listen now to Mishnah Vav. Lo yasik rikon b'Yehuda b'harugeha milchama, b'harugeha milchama v'eilech yeshba sik rikon. So to explain, a sik rikon was referred to goy rotzayach, like a non-Jewish, not just a thug, but he would threaten Jews with their life in order to hand over their land. So what the Mishnah says is Lo hayosukrim b'Yehuda b'haruge milchama u'meharuge milchama v'elech yesh ba sikrikon. So the concept of a din sikrikon, where despite the fact the land was handed over and then an individual purchased it, another Jew purchased it from this thug, then the original person might say, look, I never really parted with this land, I want it back. So what the Mishnah is saying is, at a certain point in history, it says, Baharuga Milchama, this time of Titus, where Jewish life is considered hefker, though it is killing Jews left, right, and center. In that situation, when they would threaten Jews with their lives, say, give me your land or I'll kill you, in that situation, people completely parted with their land. They just want to say their life, they said, look, it's yours. In that situation, we don't have the din sikrikon, because the person, again, by threat of life, completely parted with it. However, another point, after that point in history, then the din sikrikon didn't apply, despite the fact there were these thugs coming around and threatening Jews and said, give me your land. Nonetheless, the person didn't fully really part with their land. So let's have a look. It says, Ketzad, how's the din sikrikon? Lakach mi sikrikon v'chazav lakach mi balabait. If another Jew purchased from this thug, this sikrikon, and then v'chazar v'lakach mibal habayit, and then only after purchase from the bal habayit, then mikol batel, then it's not really considered a good purchase, and the original owner can try and claim it back. This is despite the fact he purchased it from that bal habayit. The reason is because he purchased from that original bal habayit, after he purchased from the sikrikon, the original bal habayit says, look, I'm still petrified of this sikrikon. Meaning, if I didn't comply, I was scared this guy was going to get me. I mean, I'm following your purchase from him. However, if it was the other way around, the Mishnah says, if this next purchaser bought it from the bal habayit first, when there was, I guess, no threat or anything, because it was still in the hands of the sikrikon, and then purchased it from the sikrikon, then we say michsar kayam, then it's mikro kam, then it's a good purchase. Before we continue how this law of sikrikon evolved, Mishnah continues by saying that there's another similar law to this. For example, if the husband designated certain property, some land, for the ketubah of his wife, and lakach mina ishan, the man went and purchased that land from the husband, the chazar lakach, and then after went and said, look, I want to buy it from the wife as well to make sure it's a good purchase, we say mikro batel. That's actually not. The wife can say, no, I'm sorry. The only reason why I agreed was because it was followed the fact you purchased from my husband, and I didn't want to appear if I was crossing him, and I'd have shalom bayis considerations, but I didn't really want to give over my rights or sell that land. So therefore, she still has a claim to say, no, that still belongs to me. That's due to me as part of my ketubah. However, lakha, if he's the purchase first from the isha, she didn't have to say yes. She could have said no, and then purchase it from the husband, then mikro kam, then it's a good purchase. Let's go back to the din of sikrikon. Zu mishna rishona. This is the initial law. However, beitin shel achirim amru. After that, they said, halokeach misikrikon. If someone purchases from the sikrikon, remember the original law was the mekach would be batel. But we say, if the person then purchased from the sikrikon, then noten lebalim revia. He pays the original owners a revia. What's that mean? When the sikrikon would sell it, this land that he's taken by force, he would sell it at a reduced rate, say a 25% discount. So therefore, the person who purchased this land now, the fact that he got it at a discount, he would pay that discounted value to the original owners from which this land was taken away. It says, Eimatai. When do we say that? Bezman she'im biyadan lekach. That is only when the original owners simply didn't have the funds to purchase it back from the sikrikon. Aval im yesh biadan lekach, if however the original owners did have the funds, then hen kodmin lechol adam, then they have first right. Meaning, if someone else comes and buys it and he says, I'll give you this 25% that I've effectively profited from in order to get the field from the sikrikon, the original owners can say, look, actually, here's the money you paid to the sikrikon, we'd like our land back. It says, Rebbe, and this is Rebbe Onasi, Hoshiv Beitin V'Nimnu, he formed a Beitin, and they established as a halacha, She'im Shahata Bifnei Sikrikon Shnemas Achodesh, if, however, this land was in the possession of the Sikrikon for 12 months, then we say, Kol HaKodem Lekach, anyone who comes and gets it, Zoche, it's his. However, you still have to give Noten Labalim Revia, that 25% that you've effectively benefited from at that reduced rate. Why? Why did they say that? Despite the fact the owners might still have the money, and he said, look, I'm willing to pay you back, that is because they didn't want the land of the Israel and the property of the Goyim for that long. So if nothing happened within this 12-month period, they say anyone who purchases it is, provided that you give that difference to the original owner. So there's a Mishnah today.